Okay, so let's set that up. So in terms of reading capability, yours, Sydney, the so Hebrew reading without vowels is something you're okay with?
No vowels. So I'm not brilliant, but I've got two distinguished Rabbonim with me.
I realize that. So you've got a lot of support. I feel completely intimidated. And Rashi script, have you had any experience reading?
No.
Okay. Okay, so we'll get into it slowly. So by way of introduction, Sydney, it was your idea to start at the first page of the Gemara, which is why we're looking at this particular tractate at Masechet Brachot, which is where the Talmud starts. And it was quite interesting, although it wouldn't be necessarily the one I would have chosen to start with, but the fact that that's where the Talmud starts is in itself something interesting in exploring and understanding why it starts here, and we'll get into that. But the most important piece of introduction that I want to give you, and there again, Sydney, have you learned Gemara before at all?
No.
Okay, great, fantastic. So there's nothing to unlearn. It's a clean slate. We normally you've got to try and unlearn all the stuff people have picked up along the way. One of the important things that we're going to be looking at is to understand the actual content of what we'll learn. And this is a great example. The piece we're going to start with today is a great example. The actual content is pretty irrelevant, or parts of it are pretty irrelevant. What we're challenged to do when we learn Gemara is to be able to take any piece of Gemara, no matter how irrelevant it appears to be, and extract the principles which could be life-changing. So if you think of it a little bit like if an engineer is studying mathematics, the maths itself is not that relevant. You're studying something very theoretical. But the mathematical principles and formulas are things the engineer is going to use to build bridges and computers and things like that. So with Gemara 2, the actual material that we're going to use is not always directly relevant, and we have to probe it and get deep into it to understand what the relevance would be. So let's start with the first couple of lines and then just explore what this is all about. So if you've got the first page of the Gemara in front of you, and you'll see that the first word is bolded and highlighted at the top of the page. That's just aesthetics and the way that the Masechta starts. When we learn Gemara is basically, okay, Gemara is basically an analysis and a discussion of the Mishnah. So the Mishnah is the oral law presented in case study form and was edited around the year 200. The Gemara was subsequent. So the Gemara was like from the year 350 or whatever to the year 600 or 500, somewhere around there, where in Babylon they took the Mishnah and analyzed it to the end. So they analyzed its meaning, and they also tested by pushing the boundaries of possibilities to the limits. And that's why the Gemara will sometimes look at things that are seemingly absurd, because they're trying to test what the halachic limits are. How far can you go? Where does it actually stop? And we'll see that happening as well. So the first piece that we'll be learning is Mishnah. It's not even Gemara. So if you see there, and Rabbi Thurgood can show you the Mishnah. The first word is Mishnah, and he'll show you where the Gemara starts. So you've got a Gimel Mem, in a bold Gimel Mem. That means that's where the Gemara starts. Until then, it's simply quoting the Mishnah. So we start off studying the Mishnah, which is part of the Gemara. The Gemara is the Mishnah and the full analysis of the Mishnah. And here we start with the first Mishnah that we're going to be learning. And the Mishnah starts with a kind of a question and says, "May Eimatai Korin et Shema Ba'arvin." The opening question of the entire Talmud, and if you think of the Talmud as the total body of Jewish knowledge, almost the body of universal knowledge, it's almost absurd to think of what the first question is. You would think the first question would be, what is the meaning of life? How did God create the world? Why are we here? To think that the Talmud starts with a question from when do you say Shema at night as being the very first question to ask? So that in itself is something we've got to try and understand. Why would we start with that question, and what can we learn from the fact that that question is asked first? So perhaps let's stop there a little bit and question that. Any thoughts? Why would that be? Why would that be the first question to start?
Well, because it's saying that, because I know in the morning, one of the most important prayers is saying the Shema Yisrael, so I mean, it's just maybe just getting you to focus firstly on that, to say that what the Lord is one, the Lord is one, So I mean, it's just trying to make one understand that that God is one, and it's the most important thing.
So that's great. So you're saying the affirmation of God's oneness is the starting point of everything.
Correct.
And there's a mitzvah in the Torah which we say in the we quote the Mishnah in the Shema every day. There's a mitzvah in the Torah to make that affirmation every morning and every evening. And that you don't have a siddur nearby you, do you?
I'll just take the opportunity to say hello, Rabbi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm on the right-hand corner.
Yeah, right, so I can't see you directly. Thanks, nice to see you.
Okay, have a seat here, yeah?
So if you look at the first paragraph of the Shema, And you'll see, so there's the affirmation in the beginning. The Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad is the affirmation. And then, V'ahavtat Hashem Elokeinu b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshecha b'chol madecha v'hayu. Then there's a commandment that comes after that. V'hayu hadvarim ha'ele. And these words, Asher anechi mitzavcha hayom, which I've just commanded you, which I'm commanding you, these words of Shema Yisrael, and other things too, have to be on your heart, and you have to say them. And then it says the words, b'shivtcha v'etech v'letech v'derech u'v'shoch b'cha u'v'kumecha, and when you lie down and when you arise. So those are the two words we're focused on. And you're right in saying one of the core mitzvahs of the Torah. It's not the first mitzvah, and it's not in the Ten Commandments, although in the sense it is the first commandment, but one of the core mitzvahs of the Torah are to affirm the oneness of God every morning and every evening. But let's just first have a look at the sense of what do we mean by the oneness of God and why is that so important? So when we talk about the oneness of God, what's really important is to align ourselves to the fact that there is only one authority, that there is only one power, that everything else that happens to us is influenced by that one power. It's not as if we have, you know, a business life and a religious life and a family life and a social life. It all comes together. There's one set of moral principles and universal principles that govern all of them. So when we talk about the oneness of God, we're talking about all of that, that we've only got one power to serve. And what's interesting in that phrase in the Shema is that it says, "B'shoch b'cha v'kumecha." It first says when you lie down, and then it says when you wake up. And the Gemara is going to talk about that a little bit. But why do you think it puts the lying down before the waking up? Shouldn't it start with the morning? As you said, one of the first things in the morning is to say Shema. So why doesn't it say Bekumecha uVeshoch Becha? When you wake up, first thing you should do is make the affirmation. And when you go sleep at night, the last thing you should do is make the affirmation. Why do you think it puts the morning first, the evening first? Any thought on that?
I don't want to give my talk, but I can just tell my late father used to do it every night. And I don't know why. I don't know if he did it from the Gemara or just do it that he was just taught to do it. And it's something that I don't do, but from tonight I will start doing it. And I'm just saying it's just quite interesting that I didn't understand why he used to say it every night. Before he used to go to bed, he used to say the Shema. And it's interesting.
Okay, so that is interesting. So now I'm going to teach you a technique that could change your life and give you a huge amount of energy. And here's what it is. In all other cultures other than ours, the night time is the end of the day and a time to recuperate from the day. in our tradition, the day starts at night. So when the sun, that's why Shabbat starts at sunset, not at sunrise. So the day starts at night. Ours is the only tradition where the day starts at night. And if that's the case, what is the purpose of sleep? If the day starts at night, what is the purpose of sleep? Would you say? Why is the first thing we do in the day is go to sleep? We're the only civilization that does that. The first thing we do in the beginning, a day starts and we go to sleep. Whereas everybody else, when the day starts, they get up. And it's not because we...
But we do get up in the morning.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, we also get up. But we start our day by going to sleep. Which means, what is the role of sleep?
Is it to connect our souls to God?
For what purpose? To connect ourselves to God. For what purpose?
To innovate us for the day ahead.
To prepare us for what's coming, for the day ahead. Absolutely. So whereas in other cultures, night is a time to rest from the day that was, in our culture, nighttime is the time to prepare for the day that is. And you've probably found in a lot of business writings, a lot of great business leaders talk about the fact that the last thing they do at night is prepare the next day. They go through their schedule, they check the next day, they align, they prepare the next day, maybe you do that. So the idea is to do that spiritually and emotionally too, to actually, when you're ready to, when the sun goes down, say, now a new day is starting. And the nighttime, the quality of the evening, what you do with yourself at night, the last things you think about before you go to sleep, sleep itself is all to prepare for the next day. If you get into that way of thinking and being, you find that you wake up very refreshed. And you find that you wake up with a lot of energy and ready to go. Because it's not like, oh, I have to wake up, I'm not ready to wake up, I'm still tired. The purpose of sleep wasn't that. The purpose of sleep was to get ready, was to prepare for the day. So part of what we're learning here is the need to actually use Kriyat Shema, use the saying of the Shema as part of that affirmation. So B'shoch B'chai, in that case, what is the very first thing we do each day? If you think of that and you say, what is the first obligation we have each day? That's saying the Shema, because as soon as the sun goes down, we're obligated to say the Shema. You know, we go to shul sometimes, we say it later sometimes, but the right time to say it, we'll see in this Mishnah exactly when the right time to say it is. But the right time to say it is as soon as nightfall comes, because that's the beginning of the next day. And that's what the Shema is. The Shema is actually an affirmation, a new day is starting. And so that's why we don't like to say Shema at the end when we're about to go to sleep. That's not the time to daven Ma'ariv. We say Shema when we go to sleep, that's for a different reason. But the actual Shema that we do in Ma'ariv, that is to declare the beginning of a new day. So the energy of Ma'ariv has to be not, oh, it's the end of the day and I've got to daven Ma'ariv now. The energy of Ma'ariv has to be, I'm starting a new day, and the first thing I do is affirm the oneness of God and my commitment to that oneness. And that's why the Talmud starts. The whole of Talmud starts with making that clear. The day starts at night, and the first thing you do is Shema. And when, what is the actual timing of that moment? Because that's the moment when your day starts. The moment you're obligated to say Shema is the moment at which the day starts. So that's what the Talmud is really questioning. It's saying, when does a day start? What is the beginning of a unit of time? What is the beginning of a day, and what are my obligations at that time? And that's the meaning of this question of Ma'ei Masai Korine Shema Ba'arvin. From what time do we say the Ma'ariv Shema? Begins that whole questioning of the beginning of the day. Now, pause there for a moment and tell me what you expect the Mishnah to answer. What would it say? So from when do you say nighttime Shema? What would you expect the Mishnah to say?
From what time?
Yeah, so it might say from 6 o'clock or from 7 o'clock. That's one thing it might say. What else might it say?
Well, I'll tell you, just going at the, I've always wanted at times Ma'ariv to finish quickly. But now I can understand why I shouldn't really request it to finish quickly. Because it's like you're saying, I'm just saying, taking Ma'ariv as we say the Shema, it's like the start of your day. So you should be quite fresh and prolong it, where in the past I was just taking with Shabbos. I'm wanting Shabbos, I'm just saying, to come out quite early, I want to, when it's time to come out at 7 o'clock or 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, I actually want it to come out that time or, and not later. But I can understand now why it can come a bit later, because it's just start of your day.
Right.
And it shouldn't be, you shouldn't be rushing. I mean, you shouldn't rush it in. You should just, I mean, bring it in gradually at the correct time and don't rush it because it's start of your day. It's something I haven't thought of, I'll be honest. I've always been one that I wanted Shabbos to end earlier and not later. But I can understand why people would want it to finish later. And I've learned something tonight. I mean, I learn all the time, but I've learned something, which is quite important.
Good. That's it. So Ma'ariv starts the day, and the Gemara starts off asking, what is that time? At what point does the day start? So again, how would you answer that? Just from your own, if I just asked you, at what point do you think halachically the time for Ma'ariv is? What might you say? Give me some answers, some possible answers.
Well, you know, it depends on sunset.
Sunset. So you might say sunset. You might say nightfall. You might say half an hour after sunset. You might say, but you would relate it to sunset or stars out or nightfall or something natural and easy to see. Isn't that right?
Right.
So now what's important with Gemara often when the Gemara asks a question is for you to anticipate what you expect the answer should or could be, so that if it isn't that, you can figure out why not. So let's have a look at how the Mishnah answers the question. The Mishnah says, Misha'a she'akohanim nichnasim le'echol b'trumatam. Okay, got it? Misha'a she'akohanim nichnasim le'echol b'trumatam. The time the night starts is from the time that a, now listen to this, it's complicated, I'll explain it in a bit, from the time that a Kohen who has become Tameh, so you're familiar with the term Tameh, and Tumah, a Kohen who has become impure,
right,
has to go through a purification process, which includes the mikveh, this isn't the time of the temple, not today, has to go through purification, and then has to wait until sunset, before he's allowed to eat truma. So truma is that piece of produce which we used to set aside for the Kohen. We weren't allowed to eat it, only a Kohen could eat it. So everybody, the farmers and the manufacturers, set aside that portion and delivered it to the Kohanim. But a Kohen had to be in a state of purity, in a state of tahara, to be able to eat truma, because the eating of truma had a measure of sanctity to it. And if he had become defiled, if he'd become contaminated, he had to go to the mikveh, and then wait until evening before he could eat truma. So the time you say Shema is the time from which the Kohen is allowed to eat truma if he became contaminated. And the time until which you can say it is Ad Sof HaAshmura HaRishona, until the first Ashmura would be, what's a good word for that, the first watch. So the temple service used to be divided into certain watches, and different teams of Kohanim used to manage the temple during those watches. So you'd have team one would come up for the first watch, and then team two and team three and so on, so that they didn't have the same Kohanim there for a long time. There was a lot of work to do. So they would divide it up into watches, and the Kohanim would come. So the time to say the Shema is from the time that the Kohanim could start eating truma until the end of the first watch. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer, this is the view of Rabbi Eliezer. We'll see as we go further on that this is not the only view, and nor is it the halachic view, but that's the view of Rabbi Eliezer, and it's the view with which the Talmud opens. So now I've got to ask you, you answered very well. When I said to you, what do you expect the answer to be? You said you expect it to be nightfall or sunset or half an hour after sunset. You wouldn't have thought in 100 years, you wouldn't have thought, nor would I, nor would Rabbi Thurgood or Rabbi Friedman or anyone have thought the answer would be this, that this is how you would define the time. Why would you do that? Why would you define the time in such an obscure way? Isn't that an interesting question?
It is, but that's how they defined time for many years ago. I mean, they didn't have the technology that we have today.
No, not really. They didn't have the timing, so they wouldn't have said, you know, 4 minutes past six or whatever, but they did have sunset and nightfall and three stars out. That's the, you know, that's what we use until today for Shabbat. We don't use this. We don't say from the time. And what time were the Kohanim allowed to come and eat their truma? It was sunset. So why not say sunset? It was sunset. That was the time. It was, you know, whether it was exactly sunset or 20 minutes after sunset, different views as to exactly when it was. But it was tied to the natural phenomenon of sunset. So why not give us the same as we do for Shabbat and everything else? Why not just give us the normal time? Instead of this complicated story, to open the Talmud we now understand the relevance of the question, when do you start saying Kriyat Shema, and we understand why that's a relevant and an important question. But now the answer seems to be so obscure and a little absurd. So what's interesting here is the temple service doesn't take place anymore, as you know. But in a sense, the concept of it, all that doesn't take place is the material, the actual manifestation of the service. So if you go to the temple, you're not going to see anything happen. You're not going to see sacrifices being brought. You're not going to be seeing anything happen. But conceptually, it's all still happening at those times. So a Jew thinks of the time, not only in terms of your own life. So let me give you this example. You might be busy at work and very engaged in an issue that you're having. You might even be sitting in a meeting. But you also might be conscious of the fact that at the same time, a child of yours may be seeing a physician, may be seeing a doctor, and you're aware of that and thinking of the outcome. You may be aware that your wife is having an important event and you're interested in that. You're aware of other things that are taking place. You're aware that the stock exchange is opening or the metal exchanges in your case are opening in London or in New York or in whatever markets you're interested in. You're interested in a lot of other things that are happening simultaneously. For a Jew, although the temple doesn't exist in its physical form, the temple service still takes place in a conceptual form, if you can understand what I'm saying. And what the Gemara is saying here, one of the things we do with time, all time, Shabbat, like, for example, we say the Musaf every Shabbat. What are we doing? What is the Musaf? Why do we say the Musaf? That's to align ourselves with the Shabbat sacrifice that used to be brought once a week in the temple. Even though it's not being brought now, we're aligned with it. We're realizing at this time, this is what would be happening in the temple. And we do that. The model that the Gemara is setting up for us is that's how we should live. So that all the time we're conscious not only of what's happening in our immediate world, but we're also conscious about what's happening in the world of the Avodah Beis HaMikdash, the temple service, is an ongoing process. So now what's going through your mind at 6 o'clock in the evening or whatever time you're davening Ma'ariv is my day is starting. I'm affirming the God's oneness and my commitment to God's oneness. In the temple, certain things are taking place. And this is the moment at which the Kohanim can start eating truma again if they've become contaminated. Various things are happening at this time. So in your mind, in a fraction of a second, you're aligning yourself with a temple event. And we do that a lot. So Rabbi Eliezer, who's the author of this comment, doesn't want to give you a time on the clock and say it's 6 o'clock. Or he doesn't want to say it's sunset. He wants to say, yes, it's sunset, which, by the way, is the time that various things happen in the temple. And just be aware of that, too. That's how the national day starts. That's why the Kohanim couldn't eat until sunset. Because if they became contaminated and they went through a mikveh process, then they were allowed to eat from the next day. But the next day starts that evening. So be aware that the consequence of daytime starting with sunset is multifaceted. It's not just for your davening. It's not just for the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema. The whole world, God operates the world starting the day from sunset. And the Gemara wants you to link in to this universal global concept of a new day starting at night. So all of that goes through your mind as you're performing this mitzvah of Kriyat Shema. Do you follow that? Does that make sense to you?
Makes sense.
Okay.
First time I'm learning. It's cool.
it's good. Anybody else with any questions or comments or anything to add?
I can understand of taking from let's say from many years ago that things are very structured, and that it's not just all one thing happening at a time, as you're talking about business and things. In the temple, things took place during the day and during the whole day. So you had to be aware of things that were taking place, even though they're not happening today in our world. So it, for me, it's a very structured world. Right, that I'm just taking the Gemara and all this. And taking about the Shema and taking about Musab and the evening service, which is something that I quite enjoy, because it's like being organized and knowing what's happening, not just in your business world, but in the Jewish world and in the temple and everything else involved in that. It's interesting.
Yeah, what you're doing is you're actually connecting with God's world. What's happening in God's world right now? And I'm aligning with God's world, and my life is a part of that. But it's only a part of that. There's a whole lot of other stuff going on. And for the moments that you're in davening, it allows you to link with God's world and to feel what's happening in that world. And as I said, even though you don't have the material sacrifices taking place in the temple, but spiritually that's exactly what is happening at that given time. That's exactly what is occurring. So let's go a little bit further in the Mishnah. And the Mishnah comes onto a second view, the Chachamim Omrim. Chachamim is the other rabbis, other than Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer was the only one who taught it in that particular way. So when he taught the Shema, and he taught that law that you've got to say the Shema in the evening and in the morning, he would explain that as being from the time that the Kohanim were allowed to eat Truma. The other rabbis, when they taught it, they would say Ad Chatzot, the time, yes, you start at that time, they don't disagree on that, but the finishing time is not the end of the first watch, which is about a third of the way through the night. The finishing time for Shema is midnight. Chatzot is midnight. Now, midnight doesn't mean 12 o'clock exactly. Midnight means halfway between sunset and sunrise. So depending on the length
ask a quick question, just particularly about the Loshen of the Gemara. Why does it specifically use the word Nichnase? Seems like it's a bit of a strange word. Why doesn't it use Yecholim Lechol B'Chumasam or Yachol Lechol B'Chumasam? That's something that bothered me. I've done this Gemara before. Why does it use the word enter to eat the Truma, as opposed to that they were able, or they had permission, or they were, you know?
It's a great observation. Have you got any thoughts as to what the answer could be? You or anybody around the table?
When the question arose, I thought that perhaps within the compound, within the actual, they would enter the actual compound of the Beis Hamikdash to eat the Truma. That there were boundaries within which they would actually eat the Truma. It wasn't something that they could just eat. Unfortunately, I'm not all that familiar with the halachas of exactly how the Truma was eaten and the particular halachas. But I was thinking that it had to take place within a particular... It had to occur within a particular place, eating of it. It wasn't something that, and that's why they were able to enter to eat their Truma.
It's really interesting. So I don't think that the law is that they have to eat it there, but I think what it's showing is also that when they had been become tame, so when they had become contaminated, their first coming back into their role as Kohen, they re-entered the Beis HaMikdash. So there was almost a symbolic coming home, coming back inside. And I think that part of the idea of the Nichnasim is it's an easier image to conjure in your mind. So again, you're looking at the beginning of the day, the sun is going down, and you can kind of picture the gates of the temple and the Kohanim walking through and coming in to start their new job. And I think it might also be talking about the Kohanim of that watch. So there's a watch that starts at sunset, and the Kohen had to be Tahor to be able to do that. So you had Kohanim who that day might have been contaminated, they might have been Tomei, and at that time they come into the Beis HaMikdash not only to eat Truma, but also to take up their roles as Kohanim. So I think it's all part of this image of a new beginning. I was Tommy, now I'm Toho. And you as a human being, you've had your busy day, you've been in business, you've been, your hands have got dirty with all sorts of things you've had to take care of. And you know what? Now the sun has set, a new day has started, and you can nichnas, you like these Kohanim who had been contaminated, can come in freshly into the Beis HaMikdash with a cleansed being, and you can start the watch, and you can have your Truma, and that probably links to having your dinner a little bit later on. Just this idea that you're starting the day as a cleansed human being at sunset time, not in the morning.
Well, I understand it. Why would the Kohanim be contaminated?
So Kohanim can be contaminated for a variety of reasons. If they come into contact with death, would be one of the reasons. Certain, if they come into contact with someone else or something else that has been contaminated. So there is a spiritual energy in the world. There are different forms and levels of spiritual energy. Some of them only affect Jews and not Gentiles. Some affect only Kohanim and not regular Jews. So the more spiritually sensitive you are, the more you're going to be affected by spiritual energy. And there are positive spiritual energies and negative spiritual energies. And when you're in contact with a negative spiritual energy, it actually reduces your spirituality. And you need to consciously come back and so to say, cleanse yourself. So it's not any kind of physical cleansing, but it's a cleansing of your mind and of your soul. So those are the kind of things which might have caused them to become tamei. So Rabbi Eliezer says, he says the ending time is midnight, which is the middle of the night between sunset and sunrise. And Rabban Gamliel has there's a third view, which is the view of Rabban Gamliel, who says the ending time for the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema is Ad Shiyaleh Amud HaShachar. You can actually say Kriyat Shema any time until dawn the next day. So they all agree that the right time to say it is early in the evening. Once the sun has gone down and it's getting dark, that's the right time to say Kriyat Shema. The question is, if you didn't, up till what time can you still do so? So there we have three views will appear. We have the view of Rabbi Eliezer that until a third of the night, the view of the Chachamim, the other rabbis, which is until midnight, and the view of Rabban Gamliel, which is until the morning. And then they tell a case study, Ma'aseh Uvau Banav Mibeit HaMishteh. There was a case, in fact, where the sons of Rabban Gamliel came home late one night, having been at a celebration. Omru lo lo karinu et shema. They said to their father, my goodness, we were so busy partying, we haven't said the shema yet. Amar lahem, he said to them, im lo ala amud hashachar, if dawn is not yet come, it's still before dawn, chayavim atem likrot, then you're still obligated to say. You've got to still say the kriya shema, you haven't missed the opportunity. Velo zu bilvad amru, and not only that did they say, Ela kol ma she'amru chachamim ad chatzot, any time limit that the rabbis have given us until midnight, there are various different mitzvahs that we've got until midnight. Mitzvatan ad she'aleh amud hashachar. The real mitzvah is until dawn. So they tell us it's until midnight, but if you didn't do it by midnight, you still have an opportunity until dawn. And then it gives some examples. Hekter chalavim va'ivarim. The bringing of certain limbs and fats on the altar in the temple. So we're back to this temple theme. Mitzvatam ad she'aleh amud hashachar. Although you're supposed to put it on the altar early in the evening, if you haven't done so, you can do so until dawn. V'chol ha'ne'echalim le'yom echad. And any sacrifice which is allowed to be eaten for the following day, mitzvatan ad she'aleh amud hashachar, you can eat them that night and until dawn the next day. In Cain, in that case, lama amru chachamim ad chatzot. So the Mishnah asks an important question. If the truth is that you can say Shema and do these various other different mitzvahs until dawn, why did they give the time limit as midnight? And the Gemara answers, kedei laharchik adam min ha'avera, because they know human nature, and we just, you know, if you know you've got until dawn, you tend to procrastinate until dawn, and then you might miss it. So they create an earlier deadline. We do this to ourselves all the time. We do it for our employees at work. You give them a deadline a day or two before you really need it so that you've got a safety margin. And the Torah doesn't do this ever. When the Torah gives us a law, it's as the law actually is. when the rabbis, this is the difference between the law of the Torah and the law of the rabbis. The rabbis take into consideration human nature, and they adapt the laws for human nature, whereas the Torah doesn't. So the Torah says, you've got until dawn. The rabbis say, hey, midnight. Just you better get it right by midnight, because we know human nature. And if you go to sleep because you think you've got, and you think you'll get up early in the morning and say Kriyat Shema before dawn, and you oversleep, you've missed the opportunity. So why risk that? Just set the time limit for midnight. However, if midnight came and it so happens that you didn't manage to say it, you still have an opportunity to say it, and you've still got that extra bonus time and until dawn. So what I would like you to do, and if we carry on this learning, it's something I would like you to do regularly, is to keep a notebook. And in the notebook, to make notes of what we've learned. So, I mean, we've learned some interesting things in this little Mishnah that actually don't have a lot to do with the actual direct content of the Mishnah. We've learned that the day starts at night and not in the morning, and what some of that means. We've learned that you start the day with an affirmation of the oneness of God. We've learned that the right time to do that is as soon as nightfall comes. But in your own mind, you should think of it not only as nightfall, but also as to what's happening in God's world. And God's world is represented by the temple. So what's what's happening in the temple at this time? And the Kohanim, the newly cleansed Kohanim, are coming into the temple. So me too, I too am newly cleansed from my day of normal business activity and day-to-day activity. I'm now cleansed to come into the evening, to start my new day with Ma'ariv, maybe learning a little bit of Torah, having dinner with my family, having some conversation with people I care about, saying Kriyat Shema before I go to sleep, putting myself to rest that I'm ready for the new day. All of that's going through your mind when you're davening Ma'ariv, when you're saying Kriyat Shema. The different ideas is up till when we've got. The one view is after a third of the night, the other midnight. But the principle that even when we're told we have until midnight, there's usually a longer period of time. If it's a law of the rabbis, midnight usually means until the next morning, which is dawn, which is earlier than sunrise. And the reason they give us till midnight is because human nature is to procrastinate. And here we learn a technique. So how do you deal with procrastination? You give yourself an earlier deadline, and you make that deadline very serious. That's how you deal with procrastination. You don't pretend it doesn't exist. You don't say, don't procrastinate. Look, it's dawn, and you just do what you need to do to make sure it's dawn. You accept human nature. Our nature is to keep things until the last moment, to wait until it's urgent. And until it's urgent, we get all sorts of other things to do. And we learn from this the technique of setting earlier deadlines and committing to those earlier deadlines so as to avoid procrastination. So those are some of the things we've learned. And you might have picked up some other things that you've gone away with. But for each session, keep a notebook of the things you've learned that can impact the way you live. Is that helpful?
Thank you. Yes, very helpful.
Okay. Everybody comfortable with it?
Yes, very comfortable.
Okay.
No, thank you.
Now, listen, it's I've learned something. I mean, I'm just saying, being a bit, becoming a bit more, learning a bit more Torah makes you understand things much more clearly. I'll be honest. Like saying this right now for me, before you go to sleep. I mean, I understand I don't need it early morning. Normally I try and go to sleep before midnight. So that is to say it before then. I can understand that. But one of the things that's quite interesting, I've tried to see, when does Shema have to be said in the morning? What's the latest time that you can say?
We're going to come to that. We're going to come to that. When does it start and when does it end? And with all mitzvahs, there's an enormous amount of positive energy gained by doing the mitzvah at the first opportunity. So it's like, because you offload an obligation. It's like a debt. If there's a debt sitting on your head, and you know, you feel once you've repaid it, you feel liberated. So a mitzvah is like a debt. That's why we call it a chiyuv, an obligation. And when you've done it, you feel, I've done my duty. I've done what I needed to do. And until you do it, it's on your head. And that drains energy. So the right time to say Davin Ma'ariv and Kriyat Shema is as soon as possible after nightfall, soon after sunset. And the right time for the morning is first thing when you wake up. But we'll get into that as well. And also how long you've got. If you didn't say it when you woke up, how long have you got for Kriyat Shema? So those are all things we're going to come across. So let me know if you would like to continue this.
No, definitely will. and I'll let you know. Okay. I really appreciate, Rabbi, the time that you took out of your day to spend time with us in South Africa.
Good, that's great. Good. Lovely to connect with you guys.
Thanks very much. Thanks very much.
Have a good evening. Bye.
Bye-bye, Rabbi.
Bye.